As we move forward, I think these are all topics worthy of discussion.
Topics worthy of discussion.
All right, that's the title of the discussion that we hold every weekday afternoon at this time here on the Oakley Show, and we've got our panel. Boy, it's a good one. I can tell just by looking at these fine gents. David Wills, Senior Vice President of Media Profile, providing strategic communications counsel to corporate and government clients. He's been a strategist on too many political campaigns to mention. How's David?
David's very well. That's a good description. Too many.
And well,
way
and,
too many.
And currently involved with?
The new leader, the next Prime Minister, Jagmeet Singh.
Okay. Well, we'll see if there's...
Well, you got one out of two, right?
I can't hear you over there. You're shaking there, Vince.
Vince Gasparro, former advisor to Prime Minister Paul Martin, currently on the board of directors with the Toronto Community Housing Corporation. So you don't agree that Jagmeet is going to be the next Prime Minister supplanting... your, obviously, select son.
Correct.
Okay. Peter Sherman, social commentator, government relations specialist, is also with us. How's Peter this afternoon?
Very well, and thank you for asking, and I hope you are too. You sound great.
Well, I'm feeling good because, when you guys get together, I know there's obviously a little bit of stress or tension, but it's all good-natured, so to speak. Except
never
when we get
any tension.
No, when we get around to the fortunes of Jagmeet Singh, which I'll bring up here shortly.
Oh, he's great.
Is he?
Sure. He's going to help split the vote with the Liberals, and our Conservative Party's going to win. It's fantastic.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's there have been several op-ed pieces written to the effect that this is Justin Trudeau's worst nightmare incarnate, Jagmeet Singh. He's got all of the appeal. He's actually younger. He's got the threads, from GQ and whatever else. Got minority cred. Brampton. Couldn't do better than recruiting a half a dozen, maybe 20 seats up there. Wills, how do you figure? I mean, you're really chuffed about his prospects.
Well, I think he was a great choice. He's different. He's smart. He's young. He's like nothing we've ever seen before in Canada, which is a bit shocking that it's taken this long.
Could be a liability, though.
It could be, but I don't think so. I think that, when you talk especially to young people, they're excited about him.
Not in Quebec. In Quebec, he doesn't really...
I disagree. I think all the experts are saying, Quebec this. I think first thing you're going to see is that Quebec is going to be tired of the rest of Canada calling them racist. His experience campaigning in Quebec, where the people were very open to talking to him, they're very engaged with him. They didn't fixate on the turban like all the experts say.
What, did he get like 4% of the delegates in Quebec?
Well, you don't know what that is because they didn't do it. But I can tell you this. He had more endorsements from sitting MPs in Quebec than any other candidate, including the candidate from Quebec. He raised a lot of money in Quebec. He was very, very well received. And I think if they did disclose it, people would be surprised at how many Quebec members of the NDP voted for him.
All right, Vince, I'll just let you have the counterpoint here because, you see Justin Trudeau being fallible to somebody like Jagmeet Singh or at least splitting the vote, as Peter Sherman said?
Well, look, in terms of what David just said, the NDP did choose someone different, and congratulations to them. They could have easily gone with like a Nicky Ashton or Charlie Angus, same old, same old, and it would have been a nothing. But the fact that they chose someone different, young, dynamic, I think good for them that they're going to rejuvenate their party. And look, I think the Liberal Party and Justin Trudeau needs to be concerned about it. You can't take anything or anyone lying down. And it's going to be an extremely interesting election because you have Stephen Harper Lite. Your fearless leader, John.
Who's that, Andrew Scheer?
Andrew who?
I've never heard him referred to as Stephen Harper Lite, but go ahead.
Him, and then you're going to have Jagmeet Singh and Justin Trudeau. It's going to be an exciting election, and it'll be very, very interesting.
All right, Peter Sherman, methinks maybe the Liberal here doth protest too much or doesn't see how this is going to play out because Scheer would be the beneficiary of a strong Jagmeet Singh campaign, wouldn't he?
Of course he would, and with all deference to Vince, who I think acquits his party very well, I know Jagmeet quite well, actually. He sat about seven seats away from me for a couple of years. We We're always friendly. We've been on a number of different media outlets debating together, and I have nothing but respect for the guy. He is the antithesis of what you expect from the NDP. He drives a little BMW convertible, and he wears $2,000 suits, and he's a great-looking guy, and he's younger. He's the youngest of the three leaders and younger than JT, but with deference to David, I don't think that you win elections by wishing it to be so, because if you did, I would have been in cabinet 7 years ago. and the fact of the matter is, wishing that Jugmeet's going to win is all fine. The nice thing about NDP leaders is they get a few chances, and Jugmeet's going to need a few chances if he's going to have that hope. What I said in a needling way about he and JT splitting the vote so that the Conservatives could come through the cracks is not so far-fetched, and I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but it's certainly what people are talking about, writing about. I wish him well. I wish anybody who wants to lead the country uh-huh. well. This is a big job, and is he up for it from a mental perspective? Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think we're wishing for this, though, Peter, to be honest. I think the old way of looking at it is right, left, center, and splitting and going up the middle is also the wrong way to look at it. If you look back at who's
tactical,
been...
tactical, though.
Sure it is, but that's all it is. The strategic is attracting new people. In the next election, the biggest eligible voting block is going to be millennials. And so the way that you're going to have to win is attracting new people in to vote for you. That's what Justin Trudeau did last time.
You're going to have to get them to vote, David.
Sure, that's exactly right. And you have to get them to vote for you. And I'm not sure that Andrew Scheer is going to be the beneficiary of that, because he is not appealing to that demographic. And so he's going to be left fighting for the whatever is over there, and he can go up the middle all he wants on that.
Well, I'm Justin not sure Trudeau, I wouldn't argue with you about that, actually.
Well, yeah, Peter, your point is well taken. I mean, historically, the younger cohort or demos don't seem to vote. But here's the other thing that's in the equation.
That plays to old man Trudeau, then.
Well, hang on. Old man Trudeau at 45. That's right. He's a senior citizen amongst the group. He might be shooting himself in both feet before this thing is even contested in 2019.
First, he's doing it in so many ways.
Well,
John,
the tax reform is one issue, as we've seen, and you've got now more and more pundits are coming out and suggesting if fairness is really the operative word here, then you ought to go after the pension plans, public service pension plans, go after. And we talked about it the last time we congregated, we went after. But now the energy policy is also drawn into question. Just had a guy on the line. We were talking about this energy's pipeline that was quashed, and TransCanada decided to pull the plug on it. I'm curious how this is going to play politically with your party there, Vince, because it's Trudeau 2.0. The national energy policy in the early 80s, it alienated Alberta, Western Canada. This would set up, you know, basically a fertile ground for reform and Harper with the firewall and everything. Like, boy, they were pissed out there. They're pissed now.
What Justin Trudeau has done is look for a social license to build pipelines. And if you notice from the pipelines that are being built and were approved, it's a big step forward from the last government.
The last government was in business to facilitate business.
Right, and they didn't do it. So congratulations. Well, so congratulations. The party of business didn't get any business done. So way to go.
They were on track to get business done.
Right, right. Okay, and I'm on track to go to the moon.
Well,
so the fact is, he was on track. He was on track, and it didn't happen. Justin Trudeau has got the social license from Aboriginal communities and from other constituencies to build pipelines. The fact that
drive the business out of the country. And Petronas is gone.
And TransCanada made a business decision.
Northern Gateway.
TransCanada made a business decision not to move forward. And it's a bit, it's simply a business
they made
decision.
A business decision because they saw the writing on the wall. There were too many hoops and hurdles that they had to go through. It made it intractable. David Wills, you would agree, wouldn't you?
Well, no, I wouldn't, actually. I think that you're also underestimating business. The business case for Petronas fell through the floor.
Sure.
Right, because the price of natural gas changed.
It fell through the floor,
changed.
And you can point at, we're not letting tankers in and all this stuff all you want.
We can't get our product to Tidewater.
Yep, but with Petronas that you brought up, there was no market for it anymore. The business case fell through the floor.
Markets change, right, John?
No, I understand they change, and the price of oil has gone down.
Yeah, you can't be a capitalist going for market driving things. part of the time.
In markets, well, or
okay,
you don't,
so in other words, we'll import the product from Saudi Arabia or the Middle East somewhere.
No one's making that argument, but you're talking about natural gas. You're talking about...
Well, no, I mean, that's just one of the projects. This latest one...
a piece of this.
You want a piece of this?
I want a piece of this.
Okay, hang on.
I was there when... Do you want to take a break? Or?
Well, yes, I do. You know how this works. When I come back...
I hear the music. So.
All right.
I don't hear any music.
You're going to be first off out of the chute here. In a moment, we'll continue on. Topics worthy of discussion on The Oakley Show. Talk radio, AM 640. All right, let's get back into it. We could hardly wait to hear what Peter Sherman has to say on the matter. David Wills and Vince Gasparo having weighed in. We're just talking about the Energy East pipeline that was scuttled by TransCanada earlier today. They've taken a write-down of $1 billion, not insignificant. And the complaint is that there are just too many hoops and hurdles. So this is basically Trudeau 2.0. It's similar to... Pierre Elliott Trudeau's national energy policy that really alienated the West back in the early 1980s. So are we sort of seeing it? Deja vu all over again, as the man said, Peter?
I think we kind of are. And I was there then and reporting on the fallout from that, as far as Pierre Elliott Trudeau was concerned. The National Energy Program condemned the West to hate liberals forever. So when they were making a jump from very right-wing conservatives in Alberta, for example, they went to the NDP, and next time they'll go to the Conservative Party out there. They will not go back to the liberals for these kinds of reasons. But if you go to the East, where we are, we were angry and remain angry because the National Energy Program condemned us forever to paying the world price for something that is in the ground that we as Canadians own and that there's enough of to go 300 years if indeed we're still using hydrocarbon fuels in 300 years. That's A. So he learned well at his father's knee, number one. Number two, he doesn't understand that this is not about a social program. It's about economics. It's about not having tankers come down the St. Lawrence. It's about not buying fuels overseas. It's about using the stuff that we generate and putting our people to work and throwing enough stones in the way of people who could build pipelines for them to say, you know what, to hell with you. And in the process, at the same time, making it impossible for the rest of us to survive with the costs of energy at all levels, whether we deal with electricity or we deal with oil, we deal with natural gas, whatever, because of those roadblocks. And that leads to a need for dollars. Dollars that can be generated in investment in businesses that are now being contemplated as being taken away from small businesses. And to the point that Vince made about conservatives not managing business well, conservatives were busy using liberal tactics properly, unlike today where they used improperly, like deficit financing to get us out of 08-09. And they did it successfully. So I don't need that kind of criticism either.
Well, so first of all, it was Justin Trudeau and this Liberal government that got Trans Mountain passed and Enbridge Line 3. Two significant pipelines that Stephen Harper could never get a social license, meaning he
what
could
is
never
a
get
social
it
license because
meaning public approval,
right?
Public approval and public acceptance to those pipelines. So that's one
with the environmental activists and all the rest of that.
Well, with all the constituencies that are affected by those pipelines,
right?
It's called lie down and walk over me.
No,
okay.
No,
which, when it comes to that particular side,
I completely disagree.
Well, of course you do.
Disagree.
All right. Well, then you know I'm just going to have to move on if that's the case. But look, this is something that I said at the outset may just be another dagger in his political fortunes. And I alluded again to the tax reform policy. Monday was the deadline for the consultation period. I see where a Liberal member of Parliament actually broke ranks. From New Brunswick, I believe, and said he's got to do right by his constituents because this thing was just a hash to begin with. Shouldn't have introduced it in the summer. And so he'll probably face expulsion from the party, wouldn't you say, David?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. The case, though, is that more and more people now are weighing in and suggesting that, okay, let's really drill down on this. If we're going to be talking about fairness, and you saw that full-page ad, I think the petition that was taken out in the paper last week, it was signed by a couple of people from the Dragon's Den and CEOs in industry, captains of business, and so on and so forth.
Me.
You signed it too, didn't you, Sherman?
You're damn right.
All right.
I'm shocked, Peter. I am shocked that you would sign that.
Well, you know what? It sounds
like John, I think in fairness, there was also thousands of doctors who came out and said, we're okay with this.
I'm surprised you guys didn't sign it.
Yeah.
Let's remember, this is a consultation. Let's see if they learned anything through this, because they did take a beating on it. I think there's some things that are in there that that, you know, were raised to this thing. The whole thing of income splitting and sprinkling. Okay. They try to make it sound nice by sprinkling.
But like here's the idea. Like a, here's the real nub of it, you know, as I understand it. So when people would have their passive investments for pensions and things like that, protecting the money till they actually took it out, and then they'd be fully taxed. So, you know, it was a little later. It was a deferral. But you've got all pension plans that operate on that same thing, whether it's a teacher's pension plan, public sector plans. Shouldn't they be taxed as well then?
Well, I think that those are almost social programs, right? That they're there to protect us beyond our working years.
Okay.
That's good for the economy.
Okay,
that's
so you're
good
okay
for all
with
of us.
These incorporated private incorporations protecting their investments?
Well, it's the same as an RSP, which all of us can
okay,
do.
Okay, so you're good with it. That's all I wanted to arrive at.
The public policy that led to those was for a purpose. You can tax protect savings that's going to be fully taxed. It's a deferral method.
I understand.
This was also, when these tax things were created, I'm not going to call them loopholes because you've pointed out that's unfair because it's legal.
Right.
But it's, you know, when it's pretty special that the Ontario government says to the doctors, we're not going to give you a raise, but we're going to let you incorporate to reduce your federal tax. You know, like that's like there's two taxpayers there.
Right.
So, that, you know, closing that stuff, cleaning it up, you know, it has to be done. I think they have bungled the execution of this.
Uh-huh.
And I think we're going to see some changes. But it's, you know, politics is riddled with come out with the worst, then you pull some stuff back and you're treated like a hero.
Oh, so Morneau is going to pivot on this one and still come out looking like, you know, a white knight. That's what you're saying.
I think he's going
to,
maybe not a white
he's
knight,
gonna have
but
wear
little,
it.
He's going to have a little less filth on him, maybe.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of dark stuff on him. All right. Let me just turn to other matters because, I mean, we've beaten this one, but it deserves a good pound down. How about Rob Ford? You know, the idea to rename Centennial Park Stadium after Rob Ford defeated at council rather overwhelmingly, 24-11 last night. And the mayor had been behind it. He even voted in favor of, but Sue Ann Levy was telling us she was there for the vote last night at 5-9, last order on the agenda, she thought was cowardly. And he didn't seem to be as vociferous in favor as he could have been. So did they do this out of mean-spiritedness and a pettiness, or was there a sound reason to not name the stadium, Vince, after Rob Ford?
Well, look, I was on your show, I think, last week, and I, you know, begrudgingly, and I couldn't believe I was saying it, that I actually supported the fact that, you know, this small stadium in his ward was going to be named after him. Having said that, look, I think the mayor, frankly, is a gentleman and an honorable man. And he felt it was the right thing to do, regardless of what, you know, his advisors or supporters may have thought. He thought it was the right thing to do. And I give the mayor credit for doing what he felt was right.
He said that's what he was in favor of, but the accusation.
And he voted. And he voted
for it.
Well,
he did.
So, like,
he could have actually put this maybe over the top if he really felt that passionately about it. David, I mean, was it the right decision that council put the kibosh on the naming?
Well, I'm going to say yes on that because I think that you look at that, it wasn't a right-left split. It wasn't a Tory people.
It was to a large extent, but then there were so many people on the left in council, it's hard to tell anymore.
There were people in
Denzel Minnemong is on the left.
Executive committee that voted against
John Burnside as well.
Like, well, there was a whole bunch of on the right.
What would the reason be then? What do you believe the reason?
Okay, let's step back on this. Is that, you know, last week Peter pointed out that Rob Ford had an excellent record as a counselor. He's got a lot of support out there, kind of thing. He also was a divisive character. So there's a lot of people in that room who took some abuse from him, other things like that. And people felt.
So it was petty politics.
No, I think what council did was that, no, we're not going to recognize this here. They didn't like the way it was brought forward, number one. That, you know, it seemed to be bullied in.
The mayor brought it forward.
I know. The mayor brings it out of nowhere on this. I think he's the big loser on it because I think he brought it forward without a plan to support it. Like, you should have that in there to get it through. So I think, you know, I think he's trying to tick the box saying, you know, I played this with the Ford family.
I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I think people, like, when I looked at who voted against it and who voted for it, I saw a mix on there, and I thought that's pretty definitive.
Well, some had different reasons for it, including John Burnside in Ward 26, who said, you know, there should be a 5-year moratorium on doing this. And
I think we can stop naming stuff after politicians, too.
Like, I don't know. I just finished describing how Pierre Elliott Trudeau was a divisive character, and they named an airport after him. This is just a little stadium in Etobicoke for a guy who spent 10 years being a great counselor. And I don't think it was a big ask, and I think that it was mean-spirited
by
council
4 years,
not to do it.
He also spent 4 years putting Toronto on the infamous map.
I agree, but I think we all got through this last week, and I think we should stick by our guns, unlike the councillors at City Hall.
Let's come back in a moment. One more leg to this juggernaut. David Wills, Vince Gasparo, Peter Sherman on the Oakley Show. Here we go. One last leg with the fellas. David Wills, Vince Gasparo, and Peter Sherman. I got to pivot. I mean, I know we've done some heavy lifting here talking about various social programs or issues that could divide the house. I'm not sure. Maybe this one is divisive as well. There's a mother in, I guess it's in Michigan, and she's been sent to jail for 7 days because she defied a court order to have her 9-year-old son vaccinated. It's a case of shared custody, and the father in this case wanted the vaccination. Mother says, no, and I should have parental rights over that. So should a court be allowed to force a parent to vaccinate? In a case of shared custody, she feels that somehow her parental rights are abridged here. You need the wisdom of Solomon to adjudicate this one. That's why I defer to you, David Wills.
Well, you know, I think we remember back. Remember that time that you got polio? You know, of course you don't, right? Because we got vaccinated.
Sure.
It's, you know, the people put this out, especially, like, you know, I know it's, you know, marital breakdown. I think it's all sad. But no, you don't get to make that call. And then you can go through the process, which she did, legal process. The court said this, 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 and this. She still defied it. That's the rule that she broke. And I think that vaccination is not up for debate. It works. It's good for society. The herd immunity protects us all.
Peter Sherman, I mean, is there a case to be made for parental rights trumping the court order here or not?
No, there isn't. As a matter of fact, I have a personal piece of memorabilia to share. When an MPP, you act as a notary, and so people who don't want their kids vaccinated in your constituency here in Ontario have to appear before you, present a form, tell you what their reason is, and you sign it. And you can't really object or have an argument or a discussion with them. But there wasn't one of them who ever appeared before me who I didn't think inside my head, you know, in my inside voice, "You moron." Okay, this is about protecting your child, and if you don't believe in that being to protect your child, then you'd better start believing in protecting the kids who that child associates with in school. And I think that in the case that you cite in Michigan, where the judge is now involved in a shared custody situation, the woman is saying, it's my religion that forbids it. I don't know of a religion that prohibits vaccinations unless it's part of Jehovah's Witnesses where they don't want blood given. Mm. But vaccinations, to my knowledge, have nothing much to do with blood. So regardless, I think the court is correct to order the vaccinations. And I think kids where they mix with other kids should always be vaccinated. It's the right thing to do.
All right. Well, we've got two down, one to go. Vince, how about you?
Well, we were talking about it this morning on the morning show, and my statement was really clear. Herd immunity works. And what herd immunity is there's a certain percentage of the population, if they get vaccinated, all of us are protected from that particular disease. And that's exactly what we should be doing. We need to get vaccinated. It's good for your listeners, your kids, yourself, society at whole, at large. You definitely should be getting vaccinated. And all these B-list celebrities who have absolutely no idea about anything giving you healthcare advice, I strongly suggest you talk to a healthcare professional that is trained, and they'll tell you the same thing.
All right, so you're all on the same page. Here's one last item. This has to do with immunity of a sort and protection against, in this case, debtors and creditors and things like that, collection agencies, rather, debt collection. There's a pilot project just wheeled out. 400 people in Hamilton and Thunder Bay have already signed on. They're hoping for 4,000. This is that guaranteed basic income, and it's a 3-year project, going to cost the province $50 million a year, but a single person would get almost $17,000 a year, a couple $24,000, and they can still have gainful employment and earn on top of that. They say it's going to stabilize things. It'll supplant or replace other types of social programs. The question is, I mean, the NDP brought this up in the legislature yesterday. It should be immune from any kind of garnishments or debt collections. You would think so, wouldn't you, David?
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, it's a pilot project. So if you can't have everybody going in trying to pick the pocket, you're not going to get good data. I think the idea of a basic annual income transcends right, left, center in politics, especially in Canada. There's a lot, you know, Hugh Siegel, Ernie Eves, all big proponents of this.
Mm-hmm.
The left, all big proponents of this, because the current system doesn't work that well. There was a report done on review of social assistance not that long ago. It looked at all this. You have frontline workers who are spending all of their time on accountability and filling out forms, as opposed, that money could go to people. It can go to you know, getting the training, it can help people live better, and they spend it in the economy.
But if it collapses a lot of social services and puts, you know, some of these bureaucrats out of work, I mean, is this something that might even be, I don't know, nipped in the bud or be stillborn because it's not necessarily, you know, part and parcel of growing bureaucracy?
So a universal basic income, and to David's point, I'm in favor of a universal basic income because for a couple different reasons. One, it gives people money that every man, woman, and child would be getting, in this case, $17,000 a year.
Right.
It's theirs, and that's all there is to it. If they earn additional income on top of that, that's fine. But the why people like you, John, and Peter would support it is because it actually means smaller government, because it's replacing existing programs where you don't need bureaucrats, you don't need government oversight.
Well, and if there's a compelling case that it leads to stability, better health outcomes, it's for the social good, and I'm all in favor of that. Sherman, last word to you in 10 seconds or less. You on side as well?
I absolutely am. I have been for a number of years. It would eliminate the ridiculous aspects of Ontario Works, in other words, welfare, and it would put everybody on a level playing field. It doesn't make you rich, but it makes you okay.
There you go. We're done.
Well, what a great day for talk radio,
John. It sure is. Every day, but especially with you guys. David Wills, Vince Gasparo, Peter Sherman, thanks. We'll do it again real soon.
Topics worthy of discussion.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.